what's happening and why is there such a delay?
First, the deployment of United Nations political office in Somalia, UNPOS, is a historic one, demonstrating our strong, determined will to help the transitional federal government of Somalia. This is the first time in 17 years that UN political office is deployed permanently. I hope this will bring other international partners to Mogadishu. The African Union Peace and Security Council has authorized the increase of strength of AMISOM to 17,731. I welcome it. And I'm going to make a report to the Security Council very soon. I sincerely hope that the Security Council will have a favorable consideration on this increased strength of AMISOM before we meet in London on International Conference on Somalia. I need to see that whole international community address a comprehensive approach to Somalia so that Somalia will maintain to gain this hard-fought stability at this time. I met President Sheikh Sharif and also during my visit last December to Somalia, I urged that this is a very small window of opportunity for Somalia to fully utilize this stability and fighting back Al-Shabaab. They should establish these administrations in the liberated areas. And they should also provide the socio-economic opportunities to their people.
Can you give us a little bit of a timeline as to when do you think more money can be forthcoming? And where is that money going to come from?
The first TFG, Transitional Federal Government, should implement a roadmap by the end of August. Further extension is not acceptable. That was my strong message. That is the message of international community. Therefore, that is one good benchmark by which international community will be ready to provide the support. With the strengthened AMISOM forces, I believe that TFG will be able to gain and maintain this momentum to support. UN will work hard to provide the necessary livelihood opportunities to people so that there will be less motivation for young people to go out to sea for piracy. These are all our comprehensive strategy.
Now let's switch to Sudan, where we hear that oil field workers are being kidnapped. The meetings here have produced very little but acrimony, and you say you met with the two sides and urged them to get together. But the oil is cut off. We're in a dire straits there. What is your prescription for getting things moving?
This is our common responsibility to see the improved and harmonious relationship between South and South Sudan. Their relationship should be maintained in a harmonious neighborly relationship. Now, Sudan government, President Bashir, should also fully cooperate with the United Nations so that the United Nations peacekeeping operations in Darfur, UNAMID, and also UNISFA in Abwe should be able to properly function in protecting civilian population, in helping humanitarian workers to carry out their humanitarian assistance to many people. We are deeply concerned about the humanitarian plights in South Kordofan and Blue Niles. And this area is also controlled by different rebel groups. And we hope that all these pending issues on comprehensive peace agreement, including the status of Abwe and oil sharing, should be resolved as soon as possible. I have impressed upon very strongly to the leaders of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, and also a foreign minister of Sudan to fully engage in the dialogue.
Yesterday we heard from the platform of the summit the Chinese representative suggesting that if Africa turns to the east, they won't be faced with such unpleasant questions about human rights. We heard the outgoing AU chairman criticizing the ICC. We'd like to ask, what does it tell you about the way Africa seems to be going off on its own path away from the UN and the international community?
I'm aware of concern expressed by some countries of African Union on International Criminal Court. At the same time, I am very encouraged by a strong commitment by most of the African countries on the work and the principles of ICC. One third of state parties to Rome Convention are African countries. International Criminal Court is an independent international judiciary organization whose mandate is distinctly different from that of United Nations. Thus, it is important for state parties to this ICC will fully comply with all the decisions of the ICC. Now, for the first time, this ICC is going to have an African prosecutor, Ben Suda, former Gambian prosecutor general. She's now acting as a deputy prosecutor of ICC. This means that how much Africa is committed, how much Africa can contribute to the establishment and furthering international justice system.
But there's a chasm between Africa, and you could hear the feelings of leaders, and you feel it out there, that they're a little angry about solutions imposed from the outside.
It's not true. On many occasions, when the African people were indicted, they were indicted at the request of the African countries themselves. And there were very few cases that the investigations were initiated by ICC itself.
But I'm not talking so much about the ICC, but the broader question of Africa seeming to want to go on its own course in Libya, Cote d'Ivoire, places like that over the past year, where Africa has felt that it's gotten pushed aside as the international community takes its own course.
I think the examples and lessons what we have seen in the case of Cote d'Ivoire and Libya was a very positive one, in a sense that everything was moving toward the right direction in terms of establishing international justice and putting an end to impunity and putting all these perpetrators to justice. We are now working very hard in those countries to establish transitional justice. Therefore, I'm again repeating that an era of impunity has come to an end.